Mr. Lewenden, reel 22. So was the Thompson, was the handy weapon to opt to use, or were you confident that it would,
was reliable? I mean, in some way I prefer it to a rifle, but only because it was not so cumbersome, but because it's short and you just had the string on it, and just the same, you know.
So what about the other NCOs? Were they keen? Was everybody keen, or were the people that weren't, that would rather have a rifle?
I think most of them were happy with it. Were happy with the Tommy gun.
Did you not feel you might have been an extra target with the Tommy? People have talked about the Bren gun being an obvious target for the enemy. You know, somebody that they would shoot at first because he had the machine gun. Did people think the same about the Thompson?
No, not really, because I found, in my experience, what I found was that, say for instance, you were talking about the Tommy gun. Well, you talk about the Slicer in the same way. I think the Germans would have been happy with the Slicer for short range stuff, but that's all, nothing else. So they knew that that wouldn't be that beneficial to them for the longer range stuff, and they would go more for the light machine gun, which had the similar to a Bren, which had the legs in the front of it. And the only trouble with that was that it was a two-man. You could say that a Bren was a two-man thing, because you would normally have a number two on a Bren, but he would be responsible for the renewing the magazines on the Bren gun, the same as the German number two would be responsible for feeding the ammunition into the machine gun. And they used to use a narrow box, tin box, and it used to be laid like that in layers. They used to lay the ammunition in, and they were able to take it out, clip it into the machine gun. And that would take all that out of that, and you'd have a long thing, really, you know, like a belt. And then you could fire that lot off, and then you would get another one ready. And in the same way as a number two with a Bren would, but then again, he would only have about 20 rounds.
So how do you think the two light machine guns compared, the British and the German?
Well, I think the Bren was equally as good as theirs. I don't think there's much to choose between them, really.
People have talked about the Bren having a much lower rate of fire than the German one having a pretty high rate of fire.
What do you mean, rapid?
Yes.
I suppose it might have been a bit rapid, yeah. It may have been a bit more rapid fire.
But you didn't feel it a disadvantage?
No, not at all.
With the weapons that you had?
No. If you work the two of them together, I mean, there possibly was a disability there with the fact that you would need to employ, if you're going to have that light machine gun and the German one, you would have to have somebody there, a number two would have to be there, because if he wasn't there, then I'm afraid that once you got rid of one lot of ammunition, it's a bit of a fiddle for him to put another. That's got to be all ready. So that was a disadvantage in that respect. Whereas it was quite simple with a Bren to whip the magazine off and put another one on. Although you were only taking about what 20 rounds, say 20 rounds at a time.
Not to anticipate later events, but you mentioned that sometimes you would use a Smyrger machine gun if you had to. Was there any examples of the battalion using captured enemy machine guns?
Yeah.
So that would happen. Well, we'll talk about that in detail when we get in.
There were times when I expect when that happened. I can remember it happening once in D Company. With a machine gun, but it was there, the equivalent to our brain.
What about Schmeisers? Would people acquire
them? Oh, I've seen that before. I've seen that.
So
that wasn't unusual.
So soldiers would have their own. What would that be? The rifle, and they would acquire a German weapon as well.
Well, if I could carry it, yeah.
Would that be the problem? Would be carrying both of them?
Yeah, I mean, you see, there are times when you want a free hand. If you haven't got a free hand, unless depending what the situation was, really.
Now, with the Thompson, did you have the revolver with that?
No.
The Bren gunners, they had a revolver?
No.
Not at this stage. Right. So. You're at Salerno. It's the first night. What happened then? What happened overnight on this first day of the landing?
Well, I dare say I don't suppose anybody went to sleep very long, if at all. But it was a case of getting a bit of take what rest you could when you could, and do what you could to feed yourself. Whatever you had, and then we knew that we would have to come the morning. We would probably have to push on again. But
did you have guards posters?
It was awesome. Yeah, stand to all night.
So you were the forward line of the British troops?
Well, yeah, you would naturally do that. Oh, yeah, I don't suppose anybody did get any sleep that night. You just don't.
And then the next morning?
Well, we knew that there was only one way to go. And that was to take the general direction of Salerno. But it wasn't for us to. We didn't know which way they were going to do that. I mean, our own people had their own ideas about that. Which company they were going to put forward, or whatever they were going to do. Maybe they were going to switch to somebody somewhere. Take them off on a tangent somewhere. No, there's no telling. Of course, you've got to work in with other units. That's the thing, you see.
So how did the orders filter down? Who told you what you were doing?
Oh, they were pretty good because if people wanted to get orders, I knew. And they were relying on the wireless, the signals, the wireless, and you'd have somebody on the end of somebody from battalion headquarters somewhere. Not that there was anything there, you were just in some place, and you just have you get your orders from there.
So what were your orders? What were your next?
Well, I think the thing was, I'm pretty sure that it was to go forward towards Salerno. That was it. I mean, we knew it was in front of us, as you might say. We had some ground to make in order to get there. But and then, of course, when we got there, we didn't know what we were going to find. But that was the thing, was to get into Salerno. And hopefully, by that time, we would have, if we could have got anywhere near, we could have got perhaps got the carriers up, sent them perhaps to clear the way for us a bit. Because I believe that did happen. I think I can remember that some of the carriers were going through the streets in Salerno, and once we got some sort of a hold, we didn't have a very good hold, but we did have some sort of a hold in there. You know, that was the sort of thing. See, by that time the carriers were on the vehicles. They were in a separate landing craft, and they came out. Once they came out, if they could get a trouble-free passage through, also well and good. That's what we had to do. We had to sort of make sure that they could get through. That was the idea. So not so much, you know, using the carriers, which is nothing really very much. I mean, but the point is, you've got a concentrated fire there, and they could have been very helpful. They were very helpful in Salerno, because the Germans didn't. So far as I can remember, the Germans didn't have, well, they must have probably had troops in Salerno before we got there, but so far as I could see, they just had pockets of resistance and some snipers on the roofs of the houses and behind the chimney pots and things like that. All those things had to be cleared up as we went.
You were dealing with these?
Well, somebody was, if you ran into that sort of trouble, you'd have to snuff it out as quickly as you could.
Can you remember any specific examples of that where, in the section, in the platoon, where you're under fire as you move forward?
Well, yeah, more or less on the outskirts of Salerno, before we actually got in. I mean, it was by no means a safe place, and we didn't really know what to expect. I mean, there was quite a lot of ground to cover, and as I say, they had a distinctive advantage, you see. But fortunately, it did seem to me that they'd left some pockets of resistance in there. And as I say,
so which were the ones that you dealt with?
Well, you just had to deal with the occasion as it arose. You see, if you thought you were doing all right, and then all of a sudden you see a couple of boats go down, and you wondered where it was coming from, and it was a sniper up on the roof, or firing from the window, or something like that. So you'd know that you'd have to send someone in that house, wherever it was, to make it safe.
But did you actually deal with the fire, or do you think the Germans were firing and retreating, or were they firing and staying put, so they had to be?
No, they weren't, I suppose you could say that they were more intent on putting us out of action, really. They weren't sort of making a delayed action or anything like that. Those that were left Salerno, and obviously must have been some, had already probably gone and were busy digging in, ready for the next, to make the next stand, which was in the on the hills just outside Salerno, which you'll come to. Like on the hospital there, and that sort of thing. Plenty of activity there.
So you moved through Salerno to this hill area, the hospital hill.
Well, we had to go out and into the hills, because in Salerno, you're looking out, and there's hills all the way around, So therefore we didn't have any choice. We had to take it as it came.
Right, Mr. Lerner, we were talking about Hospital Hill and your experiences just as you were moving up towards Hospital Hill, if we could take it from there.
It was outside of Solana. We had if you were able to look out from Solana up the hill through a sort of a series of grapevines. Well, they were grapevines. And once you got through the grapevines, then you had the hill in front of you with the there's quite a long slope over the top of the brow of the hill, and there's quite a long slope way down the other side. I don't know who, if there was, there was probably somebody on our left, but I know that we took the, more or less the central part. There was all three platoons.
That was D Company.
D Company, I'm just talking about D Company, yeah. Yes, that's right. So we were overlooking, we could look back down and beyond the grapevines and see Solano down in the dip. And on the other hand, you could look down the slope in front of you, you know, and see the next range of hills. So that's what it looked like. That was our. Yeah, we were there. We went up there. That was our objective, to get up there.
And the Germans were on top.
Well, they weren't. They weren't on the top at that stage when we at least had time to dig in. But they weren't far away. They weren't far away because.
And was the hospital at this stage, because it was a hospital, was there an element of a truce or a sense in which you neither side was going to violate that, or how did that work?
I mean, you mean what was it being used as a hospital?
Yes.
No. It had been, but it wasn't that. Wasn't used by anybody at that stage.
So you moved up towards the hospital then? What happened?
We got out there and dug in up there, and of course they were planning to move ahead, but as usual. But then of course we had the counterattack. Of course we weren't expecting that. That was one night. I suppose you'd be out there 2 or 3 days, perhaps. We weren't getting a lot of shelling or mortaring, but we had to be pretty careful because we were on the skyline, as you might say. Anybody along the ridge was on the skyline. So anyway, the counterattack came. One night, you know, at 9 or 10 o'clock at night, something like that. The main bulk of they had to come up the hill, you see, but they didn't have any grape. They didn't have to go through any grapevines. They simply came up the side of the hill.
And what were your positions at this stage?
Our position was right at the top.
But how were you organised as a section?
We were organised right along the top. We were overlooking as much as we could see, you know, within distance. That's like from the left to the right. So I mean, I was 18. We were over on the left. 17 was in the middle, more or less, and 16 platoon were nearer to the hospital. Yeah, I think that was roughly about the positions.
And how would you have your weapons organised between?
They had the automatic weapons and all of them, as many as we could, our own brain guns, you know. No support, not ordinary machine guns, but only the brains, and we didn't have any support.
So there was no Vickers?
No Vickers, anything like that. The only thing we did have, the position, so far as our company was concerned, the position was that Frank Duffy and the company headquarters were down just behind us. I mean, we could look around and see them, but they were some little way down the hill and in a much lower position than we were. And they had a detachment of mortars there. And really, it was a good job that they did. And it was a good job that they did, because we wouldn't have, I think they would have got through. On that counter attack, I think they would have got through if that detachment of mortars hadn't have been there.
So could you describe the counter attack and how you reacted?
Well, they came up the hill. They just did the ordinary. They spread themselves out. They didn't have any heavy machine guns. They had a lot of them as Smizers, and there were one or two that they had the heavier machine gun, like a Bren lot. And they just simply came straight up the hill, coming to us.
And was it dark at this point?
All dark, yeah. It was about, I should say, 9 or 10 o'clock at night. It might even have been a bit later.
So did you hear them before you saw them?
No, they were seen first. Somebody saw them. Somebody on the right saw them. And I'm saying on the right, as far as I can remember, it was probably 16 platoon, which was over to the right. And I think they were the ones who spotted them first. The word soon went round. We knew, you know, but there were quite a lot of them.
So how did you react as a company?
Well, the first reaction was I think it must have been 16 platoon open fire. But they were slightly on the angle, and they had to take the nearest ones to them, see what I mean? They couldn't really spread the fire very much. But once they opened up, everyone else did. And of course, it was a bit of a job to tell, really, because we didn't really see many of them. We didn't see that we'd hit that many of them, but there still seemed to be plenty of them. And the detachment of mortars that I spoke about, which was a company called down in the dip from us, they were down there, and I can tell you who that was. That was Joe Kellett, Sergeant Kellett. He was in the mortar platoon, and Joe, he's since died, must have been about 3 years ago, 3 to 4 years ago. He was in the news lesson. But it was his detachment in the mortar. Well, he was firing, I think, you know, Duffy gave him the word, and he realised that they were pretty close. So he was more or less firing vertically, because the range was next to nothing, really. So he had to be careful that he wasn't hitting. Well, his bombs weren't coming down and going off round 17 platoon, which was the central platoon, and they were most vulnerable for that, because Joe couldn't see anything. He was only given a rough range. Duffy only gave him a rough range, and that was it. But if he hadn't have opened up, that broke them up. That broke the Germans up, and they scattered a bit. And as a result of that, they were made easier targets. And so we were able to get on with it more, you know.
So how close did the Germans get to you?
Well, quite close.
And how close?
They were quite close.
But how many yards?
Well, I would say that the bulk of them, were in the, when I say the bulk, there seemed to be more of them in the area which was immediately in front of 17 platoon, as against ours, and 16 platoon, which was farther round to the right again. But I would think they were within 100 yards easily, quite easily.
So their fire towards you would be the Schmeisser fire.
And rifle, and they had the lighter machine gun which they carried, you know, same like a Bren, was similar to a Bren. Yes, they came and they were. I would think the 17th of June would probably be the most vulnerable of the three platoons, because there seemed to be more of them in that little sector than there was more or less on the flanks, you see. But I think we were 18. I think it was Sos Martin was a platoon sergeant. Ray Sykes was 17 platoon, and I can't remember.
Did you have any kind of fire discipline at this point, or were you just firing as much?
Oh no, you got your target, and
you just got on with it.
Didn't start
so
any
you
questions.
Weren't really taking orders from anybody.
No, you didn't ask any questions. No, you couldn't afford to ask any questions.
Was there a point during this counterattack where you had to make a decision to stand or to retreat? Did you feel that going through your head at the time?
Although Frank Duffy hadn't realised it, it was Joe Kellett's mortar detachment which broke them up. If he hadn't have done that, if that hadn't have happened, I think we'd been overrun. I personally think we'd been overrun. Because the mere fact that he did that, he sent some of them, turned around and started to retreat. Not so many of them, but some of them.
And that's
which did at least make it a little bit easier for us.
And that kind of raised your spirits?
Oh yeah, because you see, we weren't... there was so much noise going on around our way, because we couldn't hear too much about Joe's mortar, and that was down below in the dip, and he was practically firing like that, you know.
And the orders from Duffy to Kellett to fire the mortars, they would be near enough to talk to each other to do that.
Well, he told him, you know, he said that he realised that was going to happen. Then when Frank Duffy couldn't see what was going on at the top of the ridge, but But he knew that that mortar fire must have scattered him a bit, and so he did the only thing that he could probably think of then, and they sort of, the order went out to fix the bayonets and go out with the bayonets. But that wasn't necessary, well, it wasn't necessary, I suppose, but it was done nevertheless, and I suppose it was a psychological thing. They didn't like that any more than we did, but...
So did your section fix bayonets?